Got something on your mind? Share it with Neil. Call toll-free 800-684-2848 or in the Buffalo area, 883-5000.
Jay Brock is the creator of Red Light, Green Light, the documentary we talked about during this last year here on Lifeline. It's an incredible documentary about prostitution, human trafficking, that whole thing. By the way, Jay, with regard to the documentary, is it now available in distribution yet, or is it still kind of being held back?
It's been on a couple of TV stations, and in the late spring, early summer, we're going to be releasing on DVD, iTunes, all that stuff.
Oh, awesome.
Soon.
Well, we're seeing, I don't know how that works with the whole film festival thing and all that, but, you know, we saw it in a private screening, and I'm like, everyone's got to see this, but you said it's not available yet. It can't be seen. So, all right.
We're getting there.
Yeah, when that happens, we're going to blast it everywhere, so let us know.
All right.
Back to the book. It's A Year of Living Prayerfully. So, off-air question here. How in the world did you get into North Korea, and then how'd you get out?
no kidding. So I'm actually a Canadian citizen, so that makes it slightly easier for us to get in.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied, and they read some of my Huffington Post articles and rejected me because they said I was a journalist. And I said, no, I'm not. So I applied to another, they're all government-sanctioned tour agencies, of course,
mm-hmm.
and this one, I guess, didn't see my Huffington Post articles, and they accepted me. So I was in North Korea for 5 days. And I was there over New Year's last year, and by God's grace, I made it out alive. A couple weeks later, they actually arrested an American guy, but I managed to get out.
That's amazing. All right, so you went to some pretty amazing places like the Vatican, and you said you were talking with monks in monasteries and stuff like that. I mean, some pretty contemplative kind of settings. Then you also went to Westboro Baptist. Now, those are the people, if I'm not mistaken, holding the signs that says God hates fags.
Mm, you got it.
All right, so probably not the place most people are thinking that you're going to go and learn a lot about prayer. What was up with that, and what'd you learn?
Yeah, so I think it's probably important to let people know that this is a humorous book on prayer. It's the first of its kind. It's never been done before. And we have a crazy chapter in the book where we kind of explore the outer limits, the fringes of Christianity, to see what they have to say. And when it comes to Westboro Baptist, you know, these guys picket soldiers' funerals. They're just a pretty rough bunch. And I basically, like, I always want to just understand where people are coming from, understand their mindset. I want to hear them. I want to listen. And not because I think they're going to change my mind, but because I want to hopefully lead them closer to Jesus. And so my big kind of thought going into Westboro was, what do they pray about, and who do they pray to? Because it's definitely not the same God I'm praying to. And so I ended up spending 2 hours in the founder's daughter's kitchen with her and her husband, who's an elder at the church. And I asked them, okay, so, you know, what is your prayer for the world? And they said that God would destroy the wicked. And I said, okay, so much for grace. And, you know, they're telling me all about the different passages in the Bible that mention the word God and hate in the same sentence, but they neglect the 500-plus mentions of God and love, of course. And I asked them about the signs. I'm like, you know, those signs are really bad. Like, are you sure that's the most effective way to spread your message? And they said, Jay, we prayerfully consider what we write on all our signs. You know, signs like, you know, God, soldiers die, God laughs. AIDS, God's gift to fags, like horrible vitriolic signs. And I was so angry when I left there. I was kind of filled with the same hatred that kind of fills the people at Westboro. And I felt really guilty about that. And I remember this old quote by Dorothy Day. She said, I love God as much as the person I love the least. And that was really convicting for me. And so I actually started using a tradition I learned when I was hanging out with Quakers at the oldest church building in North America in Maryland. They do this tradition called holding in the light, where if you've run out of things to pray for someone, you just hold them in the light of God's grace, and you just pray, you know, God, help me to see them as you see them. Do the work that only you can do. I'm just going to hold them in your light. And so I just started doing that with Westboro, and pretty soon, I don't know, I just have this love for the people at Westboro now. Like, I'm kind of giddy for what God's going to do in their lives. They might actually be a real church someday instead of a cult. Like, I don't know, I just... I have such a love for them now, which is very rare in North America because they hate people. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Personal question here, but Okay, I've told the story before on the air, so I'll keep it really brief. But I went to a Buffalo Sabres hockey game, I don't know, a year ago.
I won't hate you for that.
So I'm walking to the stadium with a friend, and there's a guy with a bullhorn preaching Jesus. But it's the hellfire brimstone thing, turn or burn, okay?
Yep.
And I think, you know, repent, right? The kingdom of heaven's at hand. There's a place for a sense of urgency, you know? Mm-hmm. I get that. And on the one hand, I was embarrassed. I'm just being honest. I was embarrassed. Like, come on, dude, really? This mm-hmm. Do you think this is the most effective way to reach the people who are totally passing you by? No one's listening right now. That's how I was feeling. But the other side of me said, this guy's my brother, perhaps. Like, I think he knows Jesus. You know, like, I think that he thinks this is what he should be doing. And who am I to stand in judgment of him? And Lord, help me to love him. Because if he is my brother, I got to love him. And even if he's my enemy, I'm supposed to love him anyway, right? There's no way around that. Mm-hmm. So I felt conflicted. And I got to believe that in that setting, some thoughts went through your mind, like, how do I love these people? Because I totally disagree with what they're doing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, New Testament's pretty clear. Guard your theology, for it is your life. And I think Westboro has a very, very broken theology. They're absolute hardcore Calvinists in the truest sense of the word, that God chooses who will be saved and everyone else is damned for eternity. Mm-hmm. And that dictates everything for them. Bad belief equals bad practice. And so my prayer for Westboro is that the truth and understanding of love and grace would just invade them. You know, like, if you've ever read Ragamuffin Gospel by Brandon Manning,
yes.
I just read that weeping, like, oh my goodness, I'm an adult and I'm just starting to get a glimpse of grace because of what Brandon Manning has experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I would just love the people at Westboro to understand that, like, and it's no different than any form of fundamentalism. You know, you look at this whole jihadi thing going on in Syria and Iraq right now, mm-hmm. and they're throwing gay people off of buildings. They're killing children. Why? Because they might disagree with them. Well, the beauty of grace is Jesus says, you know, you get to have free will. You get to have choice. Because salvation is a relationship, you know. It's not religion. It's not dictated. It is a relationship. It's like
sure.
a marriage. You choose each other. It's, I don't know. I hope they realize that someday.
What would you say was the most shocking thing you observed?
At Westboro or on the
Anywhere.
Whole trip?
Yeah, whole trip.
North Korea is a whole other world. There's over 50,000 Christians in North Korean concentration camps. It's been rated the most dangerous place on earth for Christians 12 years in a row, and I wasn't there to evangelize or smuggle Bibles. I wanted to pray. And on New Year's Day, there's a tradition in North Korea that you go and bow before the dead leaders' bodies, which are stuffed in glass coffins. And if I was with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I wouldn't bow. And if I was in front of a statue of Hitler, I wouldn't bow. So I'm not going to bow to these guys. And I tried to get out of it. I tried to stay at the hotel. I tried to stay on the bus. But they keep saying, no, it's very disrespectful. You have to go. So we're streaming in with tens of thousands of people, and we go through this wind tunnel. It blows the dust off us because we're entering holy ground. And mm-hmm. we walk into this room. It's a couple hundred soldiers in the room. And we go before this coffin. And the deal is you bow at his feet, his left side, his right side. Then you bow at his son's feet, side side, and then a statue. So seven bows in all. And it's Korean, half bows at the waist. And we go forward in rows of four. And everyone else bowed. I stayed standing, and I just whispered the Lord's Prayer seven times. And I like to say that I planted seven prayer bombs in the heart of North Korea. But
wow.
I got back to my hotel at night, and I was just broken for North Korea. And, oh, you know, over a million people have starved to death in the last 30 years. It's one of the least cultivated places on earth. People are in bondage, both physically and spiritually, and yeah. I would love to see that break.
Did you feel like the kid in Tiananmen Square standing in front of the tank?
No, not at all. I'm not that brave.
Well, but, I mean, what were the repercussions of not bowing?
They took away my passport as soon as we landed and assigned me a guide, which was actually like a guard. He was with me the entire trip.
Right.
They were very angry, but Korea has a respect culture, and they are always trying to help you save face. So very furious, but I had told them ahead of time, and so it was kind of fair game. And, yeah, and lots of people praying, you know. Lots of people praying for favor and grace.
The more I hear about your story, the more questions I've got.
Ridiculous, yes.
Yeah, we got to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Jay Brock is author of A Year of Living Prayerfully. He's a wonderful brother in Christ. He's creator of the video documentary called Red Light, Green Light, which focuses on prostitution and human trafficking. It's powerful. It's going to be released in the spring and early summer. We'll be telling you more about that. I had a chance to see it in a private screening, and it's eye-opening, absolutely life-transforming. So that's coming, but The Year of Living Prayerfully is chronicles his 37,000-mile journey around the world to see what God could teach him about prayer. And we're going to be back to continue our conversation. If you want in at any point, feel free to join us. Any of the thoughts that have come to mind while listening to this, if you want to share them with us, you're welcome to. It's 800-684-2848, 883-5000 in the greater Buffalo area. Thanks for listening to Lifeline. Jay Brock, our guest, will be back after this. A wedding band weekend is coming up this weekend at Firth Jewelers. Get 30% off all wedding bands at Firth. Well, it's kind of ironic that Francesca Battistelli is singing He Knows My Name, because all along I've been calling Jared Brock Jay, which is your nickname, right? I know you as Jay Brock, but I realize on the front of your book it says Jared. You go by both?
Yeah, friends call me Jay. It's all good. It's like John C. Maxwell. No one calls him John C.
Okay. All right. So Jared Brock is author of the book. I know him as Jay. In any case, you've got a website. It's livingprayerfully.com. All right, and so it'll take you there, allow you to order a copy of the book and learn about this whole thing. So 37,000-mile journey to learn what you can about prayer. Here's a simple question. Does prayer work? What'd you figure out about that?
Does prayer work? That is such a loaded question. If God is Santa Claus, then prayer works. Yes, no, yes, yes, no, 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 yes, yes, no, you'll go crazy. But if prayer is about relationship, then it's a whole other answer. If you hang out with Bill Gates every morning for breakfast, you're probably going to get better at managing your money. If you hang out with Steven Spielberg every day at lunch, you're probably going to watch more movies. If you spend time with Jesus in prayer, you're going to become more like Jesus. And then somewhere, as you are growing in Christ-likeness and working out his great commission, you know, calling in your life, and he is doing the supernatural that only he can do, somewhere at the intersection of that, work and prayer, miracles happen, lives are changed. You know, I am the product of the prayers of my grandfather since the day he found out that my mother had conceived, until the day that he forgot my name because he had lost his memory. He prayed for me every single day, and this book is actually dedicated to him. I am where I am in my life because of prayer, and prayer works if it's about relationship. If it's just a lottery grab, if it's a slot machine, it's going to be very frustrating.
If that's what you learned, has it changed your prayer life as a result?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that have changed about my prayer life. One of them that I learned at Taizé, we would pray before breakfast, before lunch, and after dinner, and each prayer time started with 8 minutes of silence. And they did that based on a quote by Brother Roger, the founder. He said, "Maintain inner silence in all things so as to dwell with Christ." As Christians, we don't practice silence like Buddhists. We're not trying to achieve emptiness or nothingness. We're trying to have a place of quiet so that we can hear the still, small voice of God. So for me, prayer before was totally a monologue. It was a speech, which, if in a marriage, would be a terrible idea for your relationship. It's got to be a dialogue, and that means having times of silence to listen. So silence, my prayer life is a lot more quiet now.
This is going to sound like kind of a technical question, but did you make it to the Wailing Wall? And if so, I mean, that's a place of prayer. In other words, does it matter where you pray?
Yes, I made it to the Western Wall in Jerusalem. I also went to Bethlehem in Palestine and saw, you know, walked the Via Dolorosa many times, went to the spot where Jesus taught his disciples the Lord's Prayer, went to the spot of the crucifixion, the burial, all the kind of spots associated with Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. Beautiful, beautiful experience. Looking out over from the Mount of Olives over Jerusalem, seeing, you know, the chaos and the war that's still going on. I think Jesus would weep if he was there all over again. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you go, where you pray. God is everywhere. And if we just have that sense of God with us, and we invite him into the routine of life, into the daily goings-on, things start to change. We start to see with eyes wide open. We start to see people the way Jesus sees them. That's my hope, is that every conversation I have, that I can draw depth out of people, that they will draw depth out of me, that we'll be closer to Jesus because of our conversations. And that comes from a prayerful spirit.
You mentioned praying the Lord's Prayer 7 times while in North Korea in front of the remains of those former North Korean leaders. What about the difference between ritual versus relationship in conversational prayer with God? Any sense of what you learned from people? Because there are people who pray ritualistically and ritual-type prayers as opposed to conversational prayer.
Yeah, when I was on Mount Athos, it's kind of like the Mecca of Greek Orthodoxy. It's male-only, no women for over 1,000 years, no female animals even. They import male-only animals. The whole place needed a woman's touch.
Wow.
They pray 7 to 9 hours a day.
How? 7 to 9?
7 to 9 hours a day, yeah. And then they work 7 to 9 hours a day. And I asked one of the monks, I said, so when do you sleep? And he said, a good monk will only sleep 1 hour per night. So I said, well, I will never be a good monk, and I will pray for the monks on Athos.
Right.
But they have a prayer that they repeat constantly, and it's called the Jesus Prayer. And as they breathe in and breathe out, they pray, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And they pray that all day, every day, in and out, in and out. And the idea is that every breath will become a prayer to God, and they'll begin to pray without ceasing. So that's really beautiful if your heart is about relationship. So I kind of took that, inspired by that, and thought, okay, what are some ways that I can kind of attach physicality to spirituality? So for different people, it might be, you know, when you put your clothes on in the morning, you put on the armor of God. When you shower, you say, God, cleanse me from all unrighteousness. As you walk or drive, you can talk with God about your walk with him or your journey with him. Finding ways to attach the physical to the spiritual, I think, is a beautiful way to kind of change it from religion to relationship. It's more about habits, you know, life-giving,
right,
cultivated habits versus rote routine, you know?
All right, so one of the questions I know you've been asked quite a bit and probably will be asked again in the future has to do with commercialization, because you saw some of that in holy places. There was that commercializing of the relationship we're supposed to have with God in the form of religion, I would think. But then this book is intended to be sold, so somebody might say, well, wait a second, what about you? You know, how did you deal with all that?
That's a very fair question, and you're not joking when I say that it was commercialized. Like, in Jerusalem, the old city, there's shirts for sale that say, like, Guns and Moses, and, like, Super Jew, and you can actually rent crosses and drag them down the Via Dolorosa. Like, the price of hummus increases the closer you get to the tomb of Jesus. Like, it's actually horrifying. And,
oh, my. Yeah,
and so, yeah, the commercialization of the gospel is terrible, obviously, and even this book on prayer, you know, I think it was A.W. Tozer said, you can write a book on prayer, but you can put no prayer in it because it is too sacred a thing to be put on a page. And I thought that's so great. You know, I'm telling my story, and my kind of calling in life is to tell stories that lead people closer to Jesus and then give him any of the profits from that. So my wife and I, we run Hope for the Soul, the charity to fight sex trafficking, but we actually set up a second nonprofit that actually owns this book. So I'm legally not entitled to the author royalties from this book. So all my author royalties from A Year of Living Prayerfully will go to missions and ministry. And what's really beautiful is that my publisher, Tyndale, is actually owned by a nonprofit as well, and they've given the equivalent over the years of over $170 million to similar projects. So we're really praying that this book kind of does a triple good in the world, convincing people to pray, giving away the author royalties, giving away the publisher royalties. So we're praying that God would bless it, that people would buy tons and tons of copies, and that it would just inspire a revival of prayer. Our prayer for this has been that every person on earth that needs to hear this story will have the opportunity to read it.
Well, I know you well enough to know that there's no throwaway here. You want people to have ultimately a valuable takeaway. So it's a meaningful book, and yet it's written in kind of a humorous style. So, again, for anybody who maybe just tuned in, they're not sure exactly what happened in your life, just kind of recap again what you did, why you did this, and then maybe talk for a moment about the whole concept of what the big takeaway is, because obviously there's real potential for life change here as a result of what you learned and passing it on to us.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I went on a 37,000-mile prayer pilgrimage around the world, old school, like the Middle Ages. Went to over a dozen different countries, met the Pope, walked on coals, danced with rabbis, and in the process, I really revived my prayer life through meeting some of the experts and coolest people alive today and experiencing the world of prayer traditions across the Judeo-Christian prayer family spectrum. And I think what happened, Neil, by the end of it was I came back home. I learned about a hometown revival that happened in my hometown back in the 1800s, the beginning of the Third Great Awakening. And I think I really realized that my journey of prayer was just beginning. That's sort of like a first-year university student. I now know all the things I don't know. I make it very clear in this book that I am in no way a prayer expert. I'm a prayer pilgrim. I'm on a journey. We're all on a journey. The day someone starts calling themselves a prayer expert, run.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're on this journey together. We're encouraging each other as brothers, and we're praying for each other, and that's how the kingdom moves forward.
So what about hot coals? Does that work?
I walked across a 12-foot bed of 2,000-degree hot coals. Probably the most terrifying thing I've ever done. I won't be repeating it, and I kind of sunburned, singed the soles of my feet. A couple weeks later, the blisters were gone, so I'm very grateful.
But not entirely necessary in order to have a meaningful prayer life?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, again, livingprayerfully.com is the website, and Jared Brock, J-A-R-E-D, is the author. His friends call him Jay, and I know him as Jay from the documentary he put together called Red Light, Green Light. But what do you want to say here in terms of encouraging people to get a copy, to get engaged, and maybe go on their own pilgrimage of some kind, even if it's local, to discover more about what it means to have a meaningful prayer life?
Yeah, I would definitely say if you're trying to figure out your prayer life, if you haven't been praying in a while, that's totally where I was at before I started this project. And I would definitely encourage you to pick up the book. All the royalties are going to missions and ministry. We're actually, if you go on the website, livingprayerfully.com, you can watch the book trailer. We actually have like a movie trailer for the book. And this week we're actually giving away kind of a bonus bundle. It's worth about $295, and it includes 12 free ebooks and a bunch of bonus chapters, and basically just wanting to provide people with like a year-long prayer experience. So that's totally free when you buy a copy. And if you like the Facebook fan page this week, we're actually going to plant a tree in a third world for someone in need. So we're even kind of offsetting the carbon from the actual printing of the book. Even though it is printed on sustainable paper, we want to be good creation care stewards as well. So, yeah, livingprayerfully.com. We're praying that the world has the opportunity to hear this. You know, there's so much noise in the media, and we're hoping that people will find a way to help this book get through that noise so that we can connect with Christ. That's the hope.
All right, so you spent like probably a year or two putting together the documentary Red Light, Green Light, another year traveling the globe, talking about it in the U.S. and Canada. You're traveling, you know, and living prayerfully. What's next for Jared Brock? Good Lord.
Well, he is good, yes.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, we spent a year and a half fundraising for the film, year and a half shooting, year and a half touring. We spent 2 years on this book so far, and so now I feel like I need to give that some stewardship of my time. So hoping to do a lot of sharing of the story at churches and conferences, hoping to have a lot more conversations like this. I just want to be a good steward of the story. I think it's silly if you spend 2 years on something and then you don't let anyone know it exists. So, you know, marketing gets such an ugly, crass, kind of negative thing to it. But the reality is that's how people are going to hear about Jesus, is if we tell them. That, you know, it's right. Proclaiming of the gospel, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm just going to spend some time proclaiming. And my wife and I live really simply. You know, we've talked about this before. We live in a trailer in a forest. We don't own cell phones. I'm a vegetarian. You know, we've tried to really live really simply, so we have a margin of time and money to work on projects that matter. So we're lean and mean, and we move around a lot. And, yeah, we just want to convince people to pray this year. It's another year of living prayerfully, basically.
You're my favorite nut job on the planet, Jared. Just want you to know.
That's what my agent says, and my wife.
Well, there we go. Well, God bless you and Michelle, and thanks so much for hanging with us. You're welcome back, as you know, anytime. And if you ever get into Western New York or anywhere actually in our listening area, Southern Ontario, Toronto, make sure you tell us. We'll meet you there, and we'll hang out together and,
awesome.
And do a show.
Thanks, brother.
All right, take care. Jared Brock, author of A Year of Living Prayerfully, and livingprayerfully.com is the website where you can learn more. And then, as I said, early spring, late spring, early June, when they start coming out with Red Light, Green Light and make it available, we will be talking about it again. It is a fabulous documentary about human trafficking and prostitution. That right there is a really interesting young man.